Well, let me welcome back Kevin Lucco. And Kevin, we have two teams still battling out there for playoff positioning. So let's jump to the team who is not in playoff position right now, the Iowa Heartlanders, after a huge weekend the weekend before where they came away with three victories all on the road, a tough weekend this last weekend for them where they drop all three contests on the road.
At this point, really, it's not much to be said for it. It is what it is. It's a young team. They're playing out the string. And, for whatever enthusiasm they had the weekend before, getting after things, it just didn't carry over to this weekend where they got beat by a Wheeling team that they have had success against and then dropped a tight one to the Indy Fuel, who I believe we're a little depleted right now.
My apologies. I think I said three, but dropped two games this last weekend. So thanks for Kevin correcting me on that. As you mentioned, a very tough loss against Wheeling on Friday night. They lose 6-2. The team showed some heart, get behind 2-0, battle back to tie the score early in the third period, but four unanswered goals over the last 11 minutes gives Wheeling the victory, a team that, as Kevin mentioned, they had performed very well against, almost dominated if you looked at in a lot of ways out there. Jake Durflinger does reach the 10-goal mark. So does Yuki Miura. So congratulations to them on reaching double digits in goals. A very tough night for Hunter Jones, who had been very good recently, Kevin, but gave up 6 goals on 41 shots. It looks like his sweet spot in games, by the way he's been performing lately, has been that 30 to 33 range, and maybe just 41 is just a little bit too much for Hunter to be facing on a nightly basis.
Well, from what little reports I had from the game, it sounded like there was some of those goals involved some puck luck, too. So, those nights will happen.
On Saturday night, they drop a close 2-1 contest in Indianapolis. Indianapolis scores a goal in the second. Jesse Jocks with his fourth goal on the power play to tie the game, 1:35 in the third. But again, another late goal by Seamus Malone winds up giving Indy the victory. A nice night there for Mitch Benson, who stopped 40 of 42 shots. Good performance by him. He looks like, I don't know exactly what his status is in terms within the system, if this is just a guy that's brought in by the Heartlanders to kind of close out the season for them. But, for an audition, he's proven he deserves at least an opportunity to make this club next season.
I just wonder if it's something where the NHL team is going to take a look at him too as possibly a guy that could be a depth of either going back to Iowa or being a starter in Iowa or being like a depth guy with the Iowa Wild. So we'll see where he goes with that, but keep trying to round up some statistics here because I want to make a point on one player, Jesse Jocks. Jake's, not sure how the name is pronounced, but he played at Minnesota Duluth. And I know the Bulldogs generally have a more defensive system, so his numbers weren't that great, but it seems like he has taken off really well at the AHL level, so that's been a fun development as far as he goes, and we hope that it turns into something for a hockey career for him.
He has 4 goals, and he joined Iowa during that Wichita Thunder series, so only been with the team for 9 games. I mean, translate that into a 72-game season, you're talking about a guy who would have 30 goals. So,
We had 4 goals the entire season with Minnesota Duluth.
Wow. Well, that's something, man. So, sometimes I remember this talking with Carter Johnson, who played for the Wichita Thunder last year, is that he had numbers like that, whereas he only had like 12 or 13 goals in his 4-year career in college, but he came to the Thunder and had a 25-goal season for them in his rookie year, and he said, his coach kind of placed him on that he was always the guy checking against the top line of the opposing team. He was always the penalty-killing guy, barely got special teams for power play opportunities. And then when he got those opportunities in Wichita, he delivered it. It looks like, Jocks might be in that spot too. So the Heartlanders may have found a real find, or found a real gem right there for their club. So let's hope that's the case.
You know, and hopefully for his sake, maybe they'll take a look at him during the summer developmental camp they have every year in St. Paul, and maybe he's a guy, if he impresses enough people, he could be someone that could fill one of those rookie roles with the Iowa Wild next year. So we'll see where his career goes.
Well, the Heartlanders enter this week at 20-35-14 in seventh place. Still a real outside shot of catching Kalamazoo, who has four games left this week. Iowa would have to win all three of their contests and hope that Kalamazoo comes away with nothing more than a single point to have that chance. They do have a shot. Face Wheeling for three games this week, a team that enters the week at 28-36-5, a team they've had success with, barring the one game that from last Friday night. So I think, though, realistically, Kevin, you're looking at a second straight season where this team finishes in last place.
Not to mention, that's going to be four games against the same team in a matter of, 9 days. So I can say by the last game on Saturday night, things could get a little testy. So if you're thinking about a game to come on and watch where there could be some fireworks, I think it could be on Saturday night.
Absolutely. And we saw in that Wichita series that things got testier as the series went along. So Wheeling, a division rival, a little bit of pride on the line here, a lot of pride on the line if you get down to it. So wouldn't be surprising to see that get to be an extremely tense game. Let's move up to the Iowa Wild there, Kevin, as they enter the week looking to still battle for a playoff position, technically fourth place in this division right now. They are 3 points behind Manitoba with three games left in the season. Let's just look at the 2 weeks. You happen to be the guy covering them for me this week, and I was very appreciative of that. A tough 4-1 loss at home against Chicago on Friday, battle back to win in Chicago in overtime on Saturday. So we looked at these as kind of trap games, Kevin, because Chicago has had a very tough season but has battled Iowa and really made things tough for them. So I almost feel positive about coming away with at least 2 points out of that series.
Especially after Friday night, where it just didn't seem like Iowa put much out there against the Wolves. And the Wolves took advantage whenever they were given something on man rush, what have you, a scoring opportunity. But, you know, after that game, I just thought, well, boy, I don't know if Iowa's going to get through the stretch and make the playoffs. But I thought it was a pretty courageous overtime victory on Saturday night to get 2 points for the weekend.
Well, if you're looking at starting on Friday night, you're looking at things to have a little bit of concern about. It's first, you give up a goal at the end of the first period, a power play goal with 9 seconds left. You hate to see those kind of goals scored. But the bigger concern I had about that, Kevin, was three goals in the first 10 minutes of the third period this team gives up in a close, battling kind of game where it was just neck and neck for 40 minutes. And then all of a sudden, Chicago just took over. And as you're watching that game, do you feel like Iowa was not, they just didn't bring their A game coming out of the locker room, it seems like, coming out of the second period?
No, it didn't seem like it, and it just puzzles me because they have everything in the world to play for right now, and it's only a 1-0 deficit. I don't think it's too much to ask your team to win one period at home to at least get into overtime, but Chicago is a team that answered the bell and scored three in the third period to pull away.
On Saturday night, Stephen Fogarty scores his second goal of the weekend, had a goal on Friday night, the only goal on Friday night for the team. Chicago battles back to get two to take the lead in the second period, but Nick Swaney scores with a little less than 4 minutes left in the contest to force overtime. That's where Sammy Walker comes up with the winner at 2:22. Zane McIntyre with 25 saves in that game. And Kevin, as you look at this now, both goaltenders have had incredible bright spots this year. Both have had their little bit of a slump right now. As you're looking playoff time, and this looks like where Iowa's going to be at, do you feel one has earned McIntyre or Volstead? Who's the guy that you would be going with this year?
I still think you split it up. I think they've both earned the opportunity to play in the big games, and I thing too. It's also, I think it's to the opponents. You're facing a different guy every night. You know, one goalie's got his weaknesses, the other one has his, and I think it's an advantage to your team if you've got two competent goalies where you can give. If you're playing a team back to back on a weekend, you can give them different looks in the net both nights.
When the 3-point weekend for Chicago keeps them in a position to still make the playoffs, they are 1 point behind Rockford for that final playoff spot in the Central Division. Iowa with a 3-point lead over Rockford, 3 points behind Manitoba. They have three games left this week, Kevin, starting with Milwaukee on Wednesday night at home. Then they travel to Texas, a spot to Austin, Texas, which has not been a very good spot for them to face. Texas still battling to have the top spot in that in the division here. So they have meaningful games left, and they're not going to be resting guys because they're still battling to try to earn that top spot here. So as you're looking at this, does Iowa catch the Manitoba and become the number three team in this division? Do you see them dropping as far as fifth? Where are we talking about 1 week from now, Kevin?
It's so tough. The Wild have had some luck in Texas. I believe they took a game earlier this year down there. And Milwaukee right now, the team they're going to battle Wednesday, they've had a lot of guys that were called up to Nashville to help on their run. But now I see I think by the end of Monday night, the Predators could be officially eliminated from the playoff chase. So now the question becomes, how many guys do the Predators send down to boost Milwaukee? So it's going to be a tough goal for Minnesota. And, you know, Manitoba's got a game in hand too. So I don't see him catching Manitoba, but boy, the battle is definitely going to be between trying to stay ahead of Rockford and Chicago. And Iowa was dealt a tough blow by the call-up of Marco Rossi to Minnesota, along with forward Nick Batan, who are both playing on Monday night. We'll see what happens on Tuesday night. But I could see a chance where maybe at least Batan gets sent down to play those games on Wednesday and then Friday and Saturday. But I got to feel Minnesota is going to keep Rossi up with the big club to get acclimated to his line mates, because it sounds like he's going to have to play probably third-line center roles for Minnesota with the injury to Joel Eriksson-Ack. That's going to likely keep him out for probably at least the first round of the playoffs. So I don't think you see Rossi back in Iowa. That makes Iowa pretty much one-line team because, you know, Adam Walker is a second-line guy, but it's just different when you don't have Rossi as your guy up the middle. So it's going to be tough for Iowa, but, you know, this team has overcome a lot this season, and maybe they can overcome this and manage to stay ahead of Rockford and Chicago.
Well, I think that makes the goaltending an even more important factor for this club right now, because you know you're not likely coming up with four goals a night. You might really struggle to try to get three in most of the nights during the playoffs here. So you're going to have a Jesper Wallstedt or a Zane McIntyre steal one or two games in almost every series to keep advancing on here. And the good thing, I think, Kevin, is when you look at that, is both are capable of doing that.
Yeah, I think the Wild have a pretty decent defensive core. They're a little on the young side, but they've shown propensity for playing some good hockey. I think you're going to have to rely on guys like Joe Hicketts that has had playoff experience in his time with the Grand Rapids Griffins. Turner Ottenbright, I thought he's been a bright spot for this team this year. You know, a guy that was like a borderline AHL, ECHL guy, he's become a valuable member of that defensive core. So I think as much as it's going to fall on the shoulders of the goaltenders, it's also going to be up to the defenseman too to limit prime scoring opportunities.
Well, we're jumping up to the big club now, Kevin. Last week when you and I were talking, the team had come off a 4-3 shootout loss to Vegas on Monday night. They then went in to Pittsburgh, lost that game 4-1, came back home to beat St. Louis 5-3. Now, as you and I are talking, they're taking on Chicago here tonight. In Chicago. We'll have Winnipeg tomorrow, then travel to Nashville to close out the season. As you're looking at this club just right now, talk about your week, you know, a one and one week, but the opponents that you were facing, I don't think you feel really negative about that week, do you?
I don't. I don't think there's going to be a ton of relevancy to the week per se, because so we're talking, I think, Dallas is steamrolling Detroit. I don't see Minnesota catching Dallas for the number two spot in the division. Dallas has home and home with St. Louis, who has nothing to play for right now. And although I believe they're tied, I think Dallas would have the tiebreaker over Minnesota. It looks like Colorado's going to win the division. So you're looking at more than likely a Dallas-Minnesota matchup in the first round of the playoffs. In that loss on Thursday night, losing Joel Eriksson Ek, it sounds like there's a broken bone in his leg, and he's out week to week. He took a slap shot right where the shin pads end and the skate begins, just one of the few areas that's left unprotected. And, you know, he's by far the best two-way center that Minnesota has, so that's a huge blow. So, you know, you hope they play well in these final few games and have momentum going into the playoffs, but more so you hope that the team can stay healthy. And they also lost Oscar Sundquist on Thursday, but it sounds like he could be back any day now. So I think the key is to just get these three games in, stay healthy. You know, a guy like Brock Faber coming off a Frozen Four loss to Minnesota, but he's already making his debut on Monday night, so you'll get a look for one, maybe two games in the final three games here, too. So stay healthy and be ready to take on the playoffs in the following week, because it's more than likely going to be against Dallas, a team that you've played pretty even with throughout the year.
Well, they get a little bit of a break in the fact that Chicago is fighting to be losing as many games as possible to get the best chance of getting the number one pick this year in the draft. Nashville, as you mentioned, looks like that they could be all but eliminated by the time that they face them on Thursday. So, you know, they may just be playing out the season. Winnipeg still battling to try to get that number two spot in the wild card standings for the Western Conference. So, at least two winnable games for the team to help boost their chances of maybe getting a second place and at least hosting Dallas this week.
There's a chance, but I just have a feeling that Dallas is going to run the string out and beat St. Louis in both of their matchups this week. They look at the final now, they beat Detroit on the road 6-1. So Dallas is playing some pretty good hockey right now, so I just don't see them. I don't see them dropping any games where the Wild would have a chance to catch them. So, you know, they know their opponent, and at times Minnesota has played very well down at American Airlines Arena, so I don't think they'll be too flustered by it if they were to not have home ice advantage.
They lose 4-1 in Pittsburgh on Thursday, Kevin. Marc-Andre Fleury with 27 saves in that game. Come home to beat St. Louis on Saturday in a nice 5-3 victory for the club. In that contest, it is Gustafson going. He stops 37 of 40 shots. Four unanswered goals by the team gives them the victory in that game, as four different guys score for the team. They get two shorthanded goals in that contest, which I think is a testament to how dangerous this team can be on special teams, and get another power play goal in back-to-back contests for the club. So as you're looking on the overall thoughts of the team and their performance heading into this final week, how do you feel this team is just performing overall, and how do they look prepared for a club trying to make a Stanley Cup run?
You know, not only did they have two shorthanded goals, they had two shorthanded goals within 20 seconds of each other, with Matt Hartman stripping a puck from a defender. Jordan Binnington goes in for a poke check, and Hartman just made him look silly. And then very next shift, they get the puck, rush down 2-on-1 with Sam Steele being the recipient of the pass over for Hartman. So that was pretty rare. You see two shorthanded goals that close to each other. But It was a good win, but I think the thing is that some of the media were talking about was with Erickson Ack being out and St. Louis being a team that really has lost a lot of firepower. They gave up 40 shots to St. Louis, and I think that might just show the impact with not having their number one defensive center in the lineup. So I think that's something you watch out for. We'll see how they perform against Winnipeg and Nashville, two teams that can score pretty good too. So, and then going into the playoffs too, where you're facing Dallas, that can also have multi-weapons on that club.
Now, we talked about this with the Iowa Wild. You have two goaltenders here for Minnesota that have both performed very well for this team, one with a ton of experience and a few championships that he's got under his belt, the other kind of a relative newcomer to the playoffs. Do you feel like they lean towards Marc-Andre Fleury for this, or do you think coaching staff decides to go with giving each guy a shot in a couple of playoff games to see how well they perform?
Well, you know, I was watching the guys on NHL Network today, and I know they're leaning towards Philip Gustafson getting the nod for the playoffs just with the stretch of play he's had in the last few months. I mean, no offense to Marc-Andre Fleury, but very few goalies in the NHL have been better than Gustafson. So within that, I don't think you're going to – he'll probably get the game one nod, but unlike last year where I felt like they went too long with Marc-Andre Fleury with – Cam Talbot on the bench, who had played well, I don't think you're going to see a long leash for Gustafson. If he has a bad game or if Minnesota needs a boost, don't be surprised if Andre Fleury gets a shot. And, you know, it's possible. You know, teams for the most part need to have two good goalies going in the playoffs. So it's not too often now where you just see like one guy take it all four rounds. So I know if those that are listening that remember the Minnesota playoff run in 2003, they rolled two goaltenders during that playoff stretch too with Manny Fernandez and Dwayne Rolison. So, you know, it's not a bad situation if you don't have a per se go-to guy.
2.06 goals against average for Gustafson, 932 save percentage, which is just rocking. I mean, this guy has put up statistics that you just can't argue with. And while I understand, you know, people will talk about you want that experienced goaltender who understands what playoff hockey is like, there's something to be said about a guy who just is playing really well. You know, I mean, yeah, a hot goaltender can take you a long way. And if Gustafson, I think, has really proven that he's the guy that can deliver big victories for you, I think it's a smart move to really consider him to be your number one guy if he's, you know, continues to perform this well.
Well, not to mention, too, the defense in front of him has been really good this year, too. And I know that's the emphasis of the team is to try to keep the puck out from the center of the ice and keep the opposing team from the prime scoring opportunities. So you have to, along with giving the goalie some credit, you have to give some credit to the guys on the blue line also.
Well, Kevin, let's pose this to you. There's a very good possibility that they open up the first couple of games of that series against, let's say it's Dallas, without both Erickson Ack and Kaprizov. Both these guys may be out.
Well, Kaprizov will be playing Saturday, so.
Okay. Can the team withstand to come away with a victory without their top two-way center and Kaprizov kind of working himself back into the lineup a little bit here? Can they get one of those games if they have to travel to Dallas and then put themselves in the driver's seat as they get healthier as the playoffs are going along?
Kaprizov looked good on Saturday. His skating seemed all right. He was making plays. He didn't get a goal, but you know, he looked like his normal self out there, so I'm not concerned about him at all. And, you know, it would be a plus to get Zuccarello going again because I think he suffered the most when Kirill was not playing statistics-wise. And so if you got those guys cooking and you keep the second line going good with, I think Freddie Gaudreau is going to be a factor. He's going to have to be a factor because he is taking the center position on the second line, and he's going to have to be the guy that's going to have to put up the Eriksson-like minutes and try to help shut down a pretty potent Dallas offense.
How comfortable are you feeling about the team right now?
Well, you know me, Rob. I never feel comfortable about my teams. That's what years of Minnesota sports fans will, being a Minnesota hockey fan, will do to you. But, you know, it is what it is right now. They're playing good hockey, and I definitely want to count them out for making a run. But it's going to be tough because that Central Division is just so tough. If you would somehow beat Dallas, and now you've got to go and try to beat Colorado, the defending cup champions. So it's going to be tough. And I just got a feeling whoever comes out of the West likely is going to be facing Boston, and they're going to go through a lot just to get to the cup finals. And I don't know if any team's going to have much in the tank to go up against more than likely a Boston Bruins team.
Well, Kevin, take us out with what we need to know this week, or a good thought that you have about Minnesota hockey these days.
Well, it's tough to have good thoughts after the Gophers lost the national championship game on Saturday night, and I know a lot of people want to second guess the coaching in the third period, but when you look at 2 years ago when they were maybe halfway filling Mariucci Arena for Gopher hockey, and now they're filling the place up all the time. And meanwhile, you're still filling up the house in St. Paul on a nightly basis. I think hockey is stronger than ever, at least in the Minneapolis-St. Paul market, and of course the other Division I college teams in Minnesota too are also holding up their end, where we truly are the state of hockey.
Fantastic. Kevin Lukol, thanks for joining me this week.
My pleasure.
So, were you surprised that Quinnipiac comes back and wins that game, or this was really a quality team?
Well, I knew they were a good team. I just didn't know that about what happened in the third period, where Minnesota just went into defense mode, and Quinnipiac's neutral zone trap pretty much shut down the Gophers. I had a bad feeling about the game. A friend of mine was asking me how I felt about it, and I just said, I don't have a good vibe on this. They beat a Michigan team that the Gophers had lost to the week before that, so I knew they were for real.
Yeah, they handled Michigan, it looked like. So, wow. Well, congratulations to them, I guess. Not an easy loss to give up there, I'm sure.
No, it was tough. I'm glad I didn't sit home and watch it. I would have been really bumming.
How cool do you think that is that they're playing the Frozen Four Championship in Tampa, though? I mean, hockey really has come a long way since you and I were kids.
It has, Back in the day, they're playing in Providence, Rhode Island, where you're maybe drawing 9,000 people because they didn't have a big arena, but they got the Frozen Four somehow. Now they're playing in non-traditional hockey markets, and I guess Tampa's had it like three times now, and they've done a great job that every time teams that go down there just love the hospitality there. So it sounds like that's going to be a regular stop.
Red States, that's where hospitality still matters.
Imagine that.
So will you be heading out to the final regular season game?
Yeah, I'll be there. Like I said, it's not going to really matter that much, but it might to Winnipeg.
Yeah, so it should matter for them. They're still trying to cling on to that last spot there and keep Calgary off their back. So.
They,
1 point ahead right now.
Well, they won 6-2 tonight.
Okay.
So they're 3 points up on Calgary. So they only I get 1 point in the last two games, or if Calgary doesn't win tonight as they play. Yeah, what time is that at? Yeah, they're playing Nashville tonight, so pretty much a loser of that, it's done.
Wow.
But like Sean said, boy, if you're in that wild card, pick your poison between the Golden Knights or Colorado.
Yeah. Man, this is just such an exciting time to close out the season, I gotta tell you, Kevin. Man.
I hope Iowa can find a way to at least get in the play-in series, because for as decent as the teams have been, they haven't been in the playoffs now in what, 2018, 2019 was the last year, and that's the only time they've made it.
Yeah, because the next year they were rolling, and then the COVID garbage came along, and that cost them. So it's like, I wonder, as much as I like Tim Arby, I wonder if he survives them not making the playoffs.
Oh, I think he's there as long as he wants to be.
I hope
as
so.
Long as
I like him a lot.
He's developing guys for the main club, and that's the key part of it. So.
Yeah. And he is. He's delivering on that, that's for sure.
They were rumoring him for, like, the Minnesota State head coaching job.
Wow.
Thinking he might want to go back into college, but I don't think he would. And they just hired a coach today. They hired Luke Strand today. Strand was a head coach when Sioux City won the Clark Cup a year or so ago.
Well, if he's proven his worth, there's no doubt. Like I said, I just get concerned when I see a guy's not winning, you know, making playoffs or that management or whatever goes, well, I don't know if this is really the right person anymore. And, you know, it's like, well, yeah, he is. Leave him alone.
Well, the team's competitive and they're developing players, so I think that's the combo that they're going to be looking for from Minnesota.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he's a very intelligent guy, and I always enjoy chatting with him and hearing his answers. You get a chance to head down there and be at their playoff game or whatever and talk to him directly. I think you'd really like listening to him. He's a phenomenal guy to listen to.
Yeah, you know, I catch some of his pregame interviews too, and they're pretty insightful. He's pretty.
Yes.
He puts it out there, that's for sure.
Don't be looking for a one-sentence answer, though, is what I will tell you.
Just yeah, I can
imagine. That. Well, I think I'm going to wrap up here tonight, Kevin. So I will talk to you tomorrow.
All right, sounds good.
Bye. All right.